Good morning, and thank you for having me this morning. I'd like to tell you a story that, for me, with Numana began a little over 10 years ago. I was a pastor of a church, and I took my first mission team outside of the United States, and we went down to the Central American country of Nicaragua. And it was the first time that all five of my senses had been assaulted by poverty. Often we see it on television, or we hear it if there's a TV show on, but to be able to smell it, to be able to touch it, to be able to taste it. And it has all of those tactile senses that it affects you and assaults you. We were in the village of Somatillo, Nicaragua, which is right along the Honduran border, and it was about 120 degrees that day. And I was sweating profusely, and I was overwhelmed with a culture shock, and we were standing on a street. Well, it wasn't really a street, it was just like a stony path between houses that were made out of plastic or cardboard or mud and thatched roofs and incredible poverty and smell. And the streets were lined with chicken and pigs and cattle, and our youth were playing quick game of baseball with a stick and a tennis ball with some of the Nicaraguan children, and I was watching them down at the end of the street and paying attention to them, make sure nothing happened, and I was just overwhelmed with the poverty. It was really my first day ever to see anything like this, and a little five-year-old girl came out of one of those houses, and she had her dress on backwards, and her hair was filthy, and it was turning that auburn collar from malnutrition, and her little tummy was sticking out, and she did what many children do in those cultures. They come up and start patting your pocket. They know how to beg well. And so she patted my pocket, and I'd been told, you know, don't take any money out with you. And so I shook my head at her, and she pointed at my shoes, knowing that anything she could get off me, one of her older brothers or mom and dad would take it to the market, and they'd try to sell it, and that's how they'd feed their family that day. And so she pointed at my shoes, and I said, no necesito. And so she pointed at my watch, and I had a cheap watch that I'd taken with me for that particular reason, so I took it off and handed it to her, and she pointed at my hat, and like, no, I'm bald-headed, it's 120 degrees. Not a good thing. So finally, she just held up her little hands and wanted me to hold her. So I picked her up, and I have to confess, I was a little repulsed. She smelled so bad, and I knew her hair was probably full of lice and who knows what else. And I held her, and I love children, and I've raised five, but still, you know, I knew her hair was full of stuff, and she decided that my face was of intense, or worthy of intense exploration with her little fingers. So she started rubbing her little hands all over my face. I could smell where her little fingers had been, and I didn't want to take any parasites back with me, and so I pursed my lips, and I'm kind of leaning back, and she's giggling, and she's just breathtakingly beautiful. Big brown eyes, dark hair, and that beautiful olive skin, but still filthy, and she's laughing and giggling, and finally she just squeezes my neck real tight and says, feed me, I'm starving. And that did it. I just sat down on the ground and began to weep, and she was puzzled with what this big gringo from the United States was doing, and at that moment I made a pledge to the Lord for the rest of my life. I want to do whatever I can to feed starving people. And so I began kind of a one-man crusade against hunger. I started getting myself familiar with the numbers. At that time, there were 750 million people in the world that live on less than a dollar a day. And they're hungry. And now there's a billion. It's increased 250 million just in the last 10 years. Actually, in the last 2 years. And then I found out that there's 25,000 people that die every day because of hunger. That's like 71 747 jets crashing into the ground. Imagine that happening every day. Imagine all the 747s that come into Wichita just piling up out here in a field. That'd make news, wouldn't it? But it doesn't. But it's the fact. All over the world, 16,000 of those are children that die. So I got familiar with those numbers, and they were overwhelming, but I was going to do what I could. So I took a lot of teams down to Central America, and we'd do mission things like handing out food and medicine and building houses and schools and churches. And I'd come back to the States and I'd show the pictures of the starving people and the poverty. And I was actually in Southeast Kansas showing a group of people some of the pictures and telling the stories. And as a public speaker, I can usually tell when people check out. And usually it takes them a little bit longer than 2 or 3 minutes to check out. I mean, I can usually keep somebody's attention for the first 2 or 3 minutes. These people checked out in 5 minutes. I could see their hands crossed and they leaned back in the chair. And it finally occurred to me that I was giving them a problem they couldn't solve other than to write me a check, and they didn't have any money. So the only solution I was offering to them to help fight poverty and hunger was to write my organization a check. And that was it. And so I began to pray, saying, Lord, how can I get more people involved? And is there a way that I can get more people in America? Because I know people care. When you see the images, you care. It's the heart of God in you to care. But what are the other options? So while I was actually in Central America, in Nicaragua, I found a bag of meal like this. Same exact ingredients that we currently use. This is our new manna bag. And the guy told me, well, yeah, there are volunteers in the United States that package this, and they send it down to us. It's like, wow, I want to find out about that. And so I flew back to Kansas and found out who did this and called the guy up, named Lyle Mullins, who lived in Princeton, West Virginia, had a little operation back there. And I said, well, Lyle, I want to see what you're doing. Can I come back? And he's like, sure. So I flew back, and we began a great friendship, and we decided to, early on, that, you know, that's what I wanted to do in Kansas. And so we began the conversation of, do we do the same thing that he does? He had a little fixed base operation outside of his church, or do we, you know, become mobile, or, you know, what do we do? Do we have a food for children, which is what his organization was, or do we start something new? And he finally said, you know, just go start your own thing. I'm busy. I don't really want to expand. I got a lot of things going on here. And so I came back to Kansas and got some people together, and we started praying over this bag and saying, what can we do in Kansas to make it different? But our intent was to get as many people as we could together in a fun atmosphere, in a way that people gather together and package these meals. Now, I understand you have a table like this set up upstairs somewhere, so you already see what the process looks like. And so this is what we wanted to do. So we formed our nonprofit New Manna, which was named, of course, off the Old Testament story, manna falling from the heaven, you know, to feed starving people. The lady that actually named us New Manna just joined our staff last week. She worked for an ad agency in Wichita called JJO, and she's driving down the road one day, and they were working on a name for us, and she's like, New Manna, it's it. That's got to be it. Well, this is JoLynn Burke. She's sitting over here. She just went to work for us last week, finally, after all these years. And so we got our 501c3 from the government, from the IRS, our nonprofit. We set it up as a public charity so we could get anybody anywhere to package meals. And one of the decisions that we made early on was that we were going to be mobile. You know, it's hard to get everybody to El Dorado, Kansas, and save the world that's starving from El Dorado, Kansas. So we knew we had to be mobile. And another thing that we decided was, who did we partner with? Or with whom were we going to partner? Say that correctly, grammatically. So we flew back to Washington, D.C., met with the Salvation Army, and said to them, if we raise the money, and if we get you the food, will you please distribute it, especially to school children? And the Salvation Army, this was in 2008, early 2008, and they said, oh, sure, yeah, we're in 120 different countries, and we have schools everywhere that we are, and yeah, that's really, yeah, we'd be happy to do that. Now, in the world of those who are experts on trying to alleviate hunger, or at least identify what's going on, they call it the hunger space. And in the hunger space, there are two issues that are always kind of tension between the two. One is relief, and the other one is development. Now, sometimes they're seen as an either or. It's the relief is the give a man a fish. You've heard of that phrase, give a man a fish or teach him to fish. Development is the teach him to fish. And so that there's a, sometimes it's seen as either or, and I continually try to write and say, no, it's both and. Because it's like a continuum. It's the, you've got to give people a fish today sometimes. Sometimes they're going to die if you don't give them food. That's the relief component. But your eye is always towards sustainability or development. One of the core challenges that any of us face in alleviating hunger is the restoration of human dignity. That's the first thing that poverty robs from people is their dignity. None of us like a handout. And I'll tell you that I was in Dadaab, Kenya this year. It's about a an 8-hour drive from Nairobi, and the food that you all are going to package at the end of the month is actually going to Nairobi, Kenya, and we'll get it there for you. But I was a little bit further up towards Somalia. And if you've heard about the refugees that are fleeing Somalia because of the famine, I'll give you a little bit more education. There is a difference between a famine and a drought. There is a drought that's in that Horn of Africa region, which includes Ethiopia and Somalia and Djibouti and Eritrea. That's called the Horn, and if you look at Africa, there's this horn that kind of sticks up in the right-hand part. That area is considered under famine. Now, it's not had rain for about 4 years. That's the drought. Drought is caused by nature. Famine is caused by humans. So famine is caused by inefficient and, in fact, in Somalia, horribly warring governments. I had the opportunity this summer to travel over to Dadaab, Kenya. It's the biggest refugee camp in the world. It was established in 1991 after the Ethiopian famine. And all the people were leaving Ethiopia and Somalia and going into Kenya. And Kenya went to the United Nations and said, what are we going to do with all these people? We can't take them. They were immigrants. And so the United Nations went out to two different places. One was called Dadaab, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you fly in, and it's just nothing but sand and little bushes, and you land, and it's sand and little bushes. And they set up a little camp and to accommodate 90,000 people. It currently is at 500,000 people. And when I was there, 1,500 people a day showed up. And I visited with families that when they started the journey 2 months earlier, and by the way, it was predominantly 85% of the people that show up are women and children. The men have either left, they've been killed, or they've been abducted to go to war. And so the women and children, and it's a horrible, the BBC calls it the visions of hell. The last 50 miles between Somalia and this refugee camp is considered the most dangerous on earth. They're horrible conditions. And we visited with families that started the journey with 6 kids and ended up with 2. And every day they would make the decision between which kid gets fed. And so if one of the children starts getting weak, they just leave them to die. Because they have to share, they don't have enough food every day. And so they'd leave the children in the huts or in the ditches and cover them up with branches and leaves. And they would say to me, we wanted to get out of the hearing of our children's cry before the animals got them. So relief is so incredibly important in those situations, and it's a horrible situation. But then there comes the development. The development is, and in Kenya, in Dadaab, for example, the best thing to do for those people is to educate them. I don't know how familiar you are with these numbers, but if you educate a girl in these developing countries, by the way, they're not called third world countries really anymore, they're called developing. That's the politically correct term. There's developed countries, which we are supposed to be, and developing countries. So in developing countries, if you can educate a girl through the fifth grade, the birth rate drops from 7.9 to 2.7. And she, instead of getting married at 13, will get married at 19 or 20. Just simply teaching a girl to read and write. Today is International Women's Day. I don't know if you knew that. I have a blog on my website in honor of women. The best thing that in the hunger space, and this is widely known by all the experts, the best thing to do to stop global hunger is to invest in women. Because the women are the ones that raise the children. And they can take $5 and make really good things. The guys, They like to be in charge. They like to be the mayors and the chiefs and stuff. But it's the women that make the culture the best. So anyway, in this development continuum between relief and development, we saw our food with Numana being part of both. Being able to get kids in school and then get them educated. If you teach a boy, if you can get a boy through the fourth grade, he will up his farming productivity by 15% when he leaves after fourth grade. Just simple education. But often in most cultures, or in many cultures, the education of girls in particular is discouraged. In fact, in Dadaab, Kenya, and this is the stuff that just blows your mind, you walk around and there are signs put up from the international community that says stop, and these are big signs, stop female genital mutilation. They force it on girls at 11 years old in this culture, and then they forbid them to get educated. So, because some of our food actually went there, it'll go to school children, and some of the pressure's being put on that those girls will be educated. That's a good thing. So anyway, we partnered with the Salvation Army and finally said to them, would you please distribute it to school kids? And they said, sure, and we got all excited. That was in 2008, and then the economy went south, remember? As we all have been affected by that. And so trying to start a new nonprofit in El Dorado, Kansas, and have a packaging event, which nobody had ever seen, was just, wasn't going to happen. I'm not a particularly patient person, but the Lord taught me a lot of patience. And so during that period of time, I continued researching and continued building really national and international connections, hoping and praying that, you know, one of these days we'd be able to package meals. And finally, in 2009, we were down to $209.39 left in our account. And I pulled my board members together and said, you know, fellas, we either need to do this or we need to close the doors. I have been working on this. My wife and I have been investing in this. We've been praying on this. We just need to have a packaging event. Let's finally pull the trigger. And they said, well, yep, that's sure. Go ahead, go for it, whatever you want to do. And so I called up the Salvation Army and said, okay, we're finally going to do it. And we chose December 29th and 30th as to be the first dates of our packaging event, our very first one. And figured it was after Christmas, and we could tie in with the Christmas theme, you know, get people in the spirit of giving. And called up the Salvation Army and said, we're going to do it. Where would you like the food to go? They said, well, we can send it to Africa, several places over there. And I finally said, well, what about Haiti? You know, Haiti's in our hemisphere and it's close and we pay for the shipping on the food and the transportation. We thought, well, you know, I'd save us a few dollars, which I found out later is not true. No matter how close Haiti is, it's the most expensive place in the world to ship to. I can ship to Colombia, South America cheaper than I can ship to Haiti. I can ship to Kenya cheaper than I can ship to Haiti. Haiti is unbelievable. Anyway, so I flew down to Haiti, met the school kids that we were going to start feeding. The Salvation Army had 49 schools, 10,000 kids they were trying to feed. Now, you have to understand, a school feeding program in those cultures is the difference between the kid going to school or not. Those kids won't go to school if there's no food, because they wake up every morning and their challenge is, you know, parents don't ever ask themselves, what am I going to feed? They ask themselves, am I going to feed? And those cultures, they never wake up in the morning and go, well, I wonder what the kids are going to get today. I wonder what I'm going to serve them. You know, open up the fridge and look. They don't do that. That's just not even a question they ask. They ask the question, am I going to get to feed my children today? Will I be able to find food? So all day long, the kids will go scavenge for food. But if you can start a school feeding program, then the kids go. In fact, the stats show that school attendance will increase by up to 300% if you just start a school feeding program. So we were going to send our food to the schools, and that was our development component. And we came back to the United States and started raising money. And in 4 months in El Dorado, Kansas, we raised $90,000. Yeah. Wow was astonishing. And nobody had ever seen a packaging event. I had board members that had never packaged a meal. And we'd do a few dry runs. And we knew that the Lord was up to something. You know, one of my favorite passages and one that really stirs me and I hang out in a lot and motivates me and is in Isaiah 58. Now, to set the context, in Isaiah 58, the people are arguing over how to do fasting. They're arguing over how to do a religious activity. And it's a good thing to do, but they're arguing over how to do it, and they're comparing themselves to each other, and they're saying, well, we do it better than you do. And God says, I appreciate it that you want to know me. And the Lord speaks to the nation of Israel and says, your heart is really good. I like it that you're interested in me, but you're missing the point. You're missing the point. You're getting caught up in the how to do things, and you're losing the heart. And he says in Isaiah 58:10, is not this the fast that I have chosen, that you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry, and you satisfy the needs of the oppressed, and your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday, and the Lord will guide you always. There are some incredible promises he promised to give us if we give ourselves to the hungry. Do you realize there are over 2,500 passages in the Bible that talk about how we take care of the poor? It's of intense interest to the Lord how we take care of poor people and how we feed the hungry. And giving ourselves to the poor, giving ourselves to the hungry. And so we knew that $90,000 coming in 4 months, the hand of God was certainly upon this. One of my favorite passages or books is the book of Nehemiah. And Nehemiah was always going around saying, the good hand of my God is upon me. The good hand of my God is upon me. Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king in Persia. And he got this passion to go do something and got incredible favor. You know, I'm from Potwin, Kansas, a town of 450 people. It's not very big. I've been a minister. I've been a carpenter. I've photographed weddings. Ask her. Yeah, I've been a photographer. I've done everything like the Apostle Paul, a tent maker, anything that I could to make my family make a living. But feeding hungry people has been a passion of mine since that little 5-year-old girl crawled up into my lap. And so we had our first event, we raised, and I'm a lousy fundraiser. I really am. I'm a terrible fundraiser. We raised $90,000. Oop, I got ahead of myself. And so on December 29th and 30th in El Dorado, Kansas, 12,000 people, we had 4,000 of them show up to package meals. That's a pretty good, significant portion of the population. 4,000 people showed up in 2 days, and we packaged a full container, which is what you all will do at the end of this month. 40-foot container, and we had it headed back to Norfolk, Virginia to get on a ship, and we were going to send it down to Haiti, and I had already started making plans to fly down to Haiti about 2 months later, because it takes about 6 weeks to get food down there, and I was going to see the food hit the ground, and all excited, and somebody asked me after the event, when are we going to package again? It's like, well, it took us 4 months to raise that much money. Probably in July. We'll have another event in July, because we'd kind of run out of all of our money. I didn't have a house, or I didn't have an office. We didn't have a warehouse. We didn't have equipment when we started. So we raised the money, got the people together, sent the food back to Norfolk to get on a ship, and we missed the shipping date because of a snowstorm. So we had to stick the food in a warehouse, which frustrated me. It's like, come on, people are down there and they're hungry. And then the earthquake hit. 2 hours after the earthquake hit Haiti, Colonel Sterrett from D.C.'s office called me up and said, where's that food? Can we get at it tonight? And I said, well, yeah, it's in a warehouse. And we're actually going to put it on the ship the next day. And he said, well, can I have it? I was like, well, yeah, it's for you guys. And he said, well, I'm working with the 82nd Airborne. We think we can get it in. And can you do more? One of my leadership principles is commit and then figure it out.
Yeah.
Drives my staff sometimes crazy. My marketing director from Kansas City, she just pulls her hair out. And I said, sure. He said, well, I've got some money that we can actually help pay for the product that you need, but I need 2 more containers by this weekend. Now, this was Tuesday. Can you do it? Sure. So I called up the Civic Center the next day, and I called our supplier, and I sent stuff out to churches. And that next weekend, we had another 4,000 people show up. and on Friday packaged a full container, and on Saturday packaged another full container. He called me at Friday night at midnight, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm trying to go to sleep, midnight." He said, "Well, just thought I'd let you know that we actually parachuted the first container in with the 82nd Airborne, and I need more food. Can you do that?" And I said, "Sure." And I didn't think much about it. We were tired and went to sleep and got up the next morning about 5:30. My wife and I were actually praying for all of our friends in Haiti and just the whole thing that was going on down there. And my wife just starts weeping and she says, "Oh, honey, don't you get it?" And I was like, "Honey, it's 5:30 in the morning. I don't get much." And she said, "All the years of prayer, all the years of research, all the years of money that we've spent into it, our first box of new manna actually fell from the sky to starving people." Isn't that cool? You can... God has a story he wanted to tell. You can't make things like that up. So I called one of my board members later that morning and I said, "Wow, they want more food. The Civic Center, we've outgrown it. Can you call some, do you know Wink Hartman? You know, anybody, can we get an arena in Wichita next weekend?" He said, "I don't know, I'll call you back." 45 minutes later, he calls me back and he says, "I got the Kansas Coliseum for 4 days next weekend, totally free. The Britt Brown Arena, do you think it's big enough?" Now, I still was officing out of my house. I had never taken a dime for anything. I mean, New Man had been something we'd invested thousands of dollars in, and I didn't have a staff, I didn't have a truck, we just had some packaging equipment, and it's like, yeah, sure, yeah. So we called up our suppliers and ordered, and that next weekend we had over 12,000 people show up at the Kansas Coliseum. We packaged 1,225,000 meals, 5 weeks after our first packaging event. And at times the line was 150 yards deep outside, and this is January, and six people across. One of the event directors at the Coliseum said, "You'd have thought this was a rock concert." And one of the things we continually hear from and would hear from people as they leave and still do is, "What is this feeling? What just happened to me?" One man walked out of there and he was a very dignified businessman in Wichita, tears streaming down his cheeks, and he said, "I've never had anything in my life that has been of more significance than what I've done in the last hour. What has happened?" And as I explained to a number of people, we've touched in to the nerve of the heart of God within humanity. And we've given people an opportunity to do something about hunger. And it just exploded after that. In our first year, we packaged 21 million meals. We were in San Francisco and Seattle and Los Angeles and Philadelphia, and we'd go back with the Salvation Army and 10, 15,000 people would show up at these events and we'd package these meals, and it was a blur of activity for the first 6 months in particular. And in that period of time, engaged over 125,000 volunteers. And so we realized something at the very end of the year. We sat down and as a staff looked at each other, I mean, I went from nothing to having a staff of 5 or 6 people at the time, and now it's grown to 13. It's like, wow, what has just happened to us? What is going on? And so we examined what we do, and we learned that one of the things we do best is build community. We build community, whether it's 12 people that gather around a table and package these meals, or your entire church coming together. There is something incredibly special about the unity around taking care of the poor that God's heart is passionately involved in. He's passionately involved in. You know, as Christians, we know we're supposed to talk to people about the Lord, but we always have a difficult time trying to find those points of entry. Now, how do we start this conversation without seeming judgmental or religious or, you know, offending people? How do we have a conversation about Jesus? You know, I have found the New Manna story opens up doors like nothing I've ever experienced, and I've been a Christian since I was 5 years old. You tell the story, and what happens is people come to a conclusion: it's either God or as I had an atheist tell me, an atheist professor at Washburn, or it's serendipity. Yeah, like, really? Come on. Really? You think? And it just gives an easy access point to begin talking about what the heart of God really is about. And He loves us when we take care of the poor and the hungry. He cares passionately about that. The challenge for us has been, as Americans, the only option we've ever been given is to write a check. And I know you're probably like me. We're a little bit suspicious of what people do with our money. You know, so we'll give it to the church, knowing they're going to do good things, we can see. But, you know, these other organizations, like, yeah, I'm not so sure. A lady called me before one of our events and said, so, are you a legitimate organization? Well, we're trying really hard to be. She said, well, I'm going to give you some money, but I'm not sure that, you know, you're really legitimate. And I said, I tell you what, you show up tomorrow and you package meals. And you find me, we had a big event, you tell me how much you want to package and or how much money you want to give me, and I'll make sure, because we have to buy all the product. Nobody gives us the rice and the beans and everything we put. So she showed up the next day, had a check for $100. And I said, okay, that's about, not quite two boxes, but I'll make sure you package two boxes with these people over there. And not only that, just stay and package as long as you want. So she stayed and packaged for about an hour, and when she left, she wrote me a check for $1,000. And she said, you really are legitimate. And I said, well, you know, it's not like we're taking our food and throwing a big feast for all of our rich friends. We have to do with it what we say we're going to do with it. I just want to challenge you today. Oh, by the way, in the middle of the whole thing, the city of El Dorado sold us 4 acres. So now we have our warehouse, and they sold it for a dollar. It's in their business park. So if you ever pop up over the turnpike going into El Dorado, and you look off to the south of the Holiday Inn Express, you'll see a big red building and a little red building. And the city of El Dorado sold us all of that land for a dollar in the midst of all of our stuff. So that's where our international headquarters are now. We have food going to 8 different countries and are working on a number more of those kind of relationships. We've got incredible partnerships we've established with universities in Kansas. We brought them together and have started something called a hunger dialogue. And in fact, I think I have some. Those are some of the countries we're in. We started something called the Kansas Hunger Dialogue. Last year, we focused on bringing the universities together in Kansas. We were able to successfully bring 20 of them. And they began a dialogue about how do they integrate hunger issues into their campuses. We just left the second annual Kansas Hunger Dialogue, which they picked up and they ran with 21 universities, and they're the top administrators and the top student leaders. They're the presidents and the provosts that come together. And so they're talking about not only global hunger, but national hunger. We've got hunger issues that are arising in the United States. By the way, we have a whole new initiative on domestic hunger and how we're fighting that in a community food system that we just won a National Innovation Award for from the National Alliance to End Hunger. And we believe it's really a download from the Lord to a community about how to really take care of one another. We also started something called Swipe Out Hunger. We were on 16 different campuses last year. We had nearly 4,400 participants, 600,000 meals right at package. Those went to Dadaab, to the refugee camps that I was telling you about earlier. And then we've got this food system that we've started that we've on a domestic issue that involves production and the processing and the distribution. USDA's state and rural development people say they're going to make this their signature project. It's an innovative way to think about how we take care of the hungry and provide healthy food in our community. So that is the story of Numana. We're 2 years old, a little over 2 years old. And as Nehemiah would say, the good hand of our God is upon us. Are there any questions?
I just wanted to, if you could share with us what we'll be doing in our small groups regarding writing.
Okay. We have an initiative called Messages of Hope. I'll finish up with that and I'll let JoLynn address that. Yes.
I was just going to say, I was just in Kenya and did the mission trip this last December with Missions of Hope and saw the slums of the food that Westlink is going to prepare that is going to go into these homes. And you go into these homes and they have nothing.
No.
They go outside and they cook their food in a pot over a charcoal fire. I mean, to know that, having been there and walked and loved on those children that you don't know what they've been in, you walk through it to get to their huts. And to know that we're, as a church, we're going to touch these people. I mean, this just, there's nothing like going and walking in it and then knowing you're going to bless them.
Yeah.
And the organization we're working with over there, Missions of Hope, that's what they've done. They've gone into those slums and they've taken those kids and they're giving them that education, because that is what's going to, most of those parents have never, ever been in a school. They can't read, they can't write. And those kids, that's the opportunity we as a church are giving them. So please sign your families up and do this. We did it at Central 2 years ago with our granddaughters. I mean, if you've got kids even 3, 4 years old, have them come, if nothing else, stand next to you and just share that time with them and use that as a teaching moment, because they'll never forget it.
I've been in some of those slums in Nairobi. The second biggest one in the world is called Kibera.
We were in Mathari.
Mathari, yeah, they're the same. Yeah, unbelievable poverty. And when you walk down those slums, they're called flying outhouses. They defecate in plastic bags and they'll throw it at you. Yeah. So they told me when I was walking down, watch out for the flying outhouses. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, I imagine, you know, porta potties circling around in the space. They're like, if you see a plastic bag, if you hear a plastic bag, duck. Thanks, I appreciate. So anyway, yes. Nothing. They have nothing. So what you're going to do, and I'm going to have Jolynn explain a little bit of it, we have something called Messages of Hope, and it's a way for you to get a little bit more involved. And there's translations. You can actually write on stickers in Swahili, which is the language that they'll know, and send them messages along with these boxes that your church will package. So, kind of neat. Any other questions? Jolynn, I'm going to have you explain it then.
Okay, well, the program is really pretty simple. Messages of Hope gives you the opportunity to actually write a message on a sticker that will go on a box of food, and all of the messages that you could choose to, if you choose to participate, will actually go on the boxes that are going to Nairobi. It's basically just for a donation that goes towards the effort, and there's a donation form. And you can take cash or credit, debit. So if you'll fill that out, we also have some leave behinds that tell a little bit more about the story with Messages of Hope. And we're prepared to do this today if you want to contribute. $15 will feed 50 people, $30 feeds 100 people, and $65, which is the amount needed for a full box of food, feeds 216 people. So you can see how just a little bit can go a long way. And there is no specific amount needed as far as a donation in order to participate in this. Even if you just have $5, you're welcome to do a Messages of Hope. And I guess we're going to try and accommodate the Swahili translation. We hadn't really talked about that before, but we do have a translator who's actually online with the Messages of Hope site. So even if you chose not to do this today, it is something that you could do later by logging in to the website.
Joan, the money that will go toward this event to the Western Canada.
Yes, the money from from any of the Messages of Hope that you do are going to go to your event. I don't know how it's not clear about that, but. If you go to the NewManaInc.com site, you can find the Messages of Hope. There should be a tab that will take you to the Messages of Hope page.
Or SaveTheStarving.com.
Or SavingTheStarving.com.
But the translation is actually on the website. You write whatever you want and say translate, and it'll kick out whatever it is in Swahili you want to say. So it's not projecting that. Any questions before we close? Before I turn it over to you, Abby? Yes?
Are there any other upcoming events besides this one here at the church in Wichita coming up pretty soon?
Jay would know. Jay Lewis is our partnership development. He's the one that set up a lot of these in Wichita. Jay?
We have some small ones, but they're closed right now because they're like a particular church is doing it, and they're all full. There are actually five locations the weekend that you all are doing yours at one time. So
you can hop on our website and look on the right-hand side, and it'll show you the upcoming ones. Yes?
Does any of the food stay in America, or does it all go overseas?
Right now, it all goes overseas. We are fresh off the presses working on a mac and cheese ingredient that we can use, but it takes a different process. Actually, it takes different approval. Because once you start feeding food in America, FDA gets a lot more interested in what you're doing. So it's a mac and cheese, but an incredibly nutritious meal that we're rolling off the presses. I mean, it's just fresh off the, got FDA approval and approval by Feeding America, which is the big organization that oversees like Kansas Food Bank and Harvesters and all of that. So, but currently it all goes overseas. Yeah, great idea, great question. What's in this bag is texturized soy, so the protein comes from the soy. There's rice, there's dehydrated pinto beans. We used to have freeze-dried veggies, but in Haiti and the tent cities, the rumor started going around. They didn't know what the freeze-dried vegetables were. They could recognize the beans, but they didn't know the veggies, and so the rumor started going around that we were making zombies out of them. So they quit eating it. And then there's a vitamin. It's a little packet of vitamins. Those vitamins, there's 21 of them that are geared towards malnourished people. So it's an incredibly nutritious. In the last few years, food aid in America or on international level, there's been a real shift from just throwing bags of beans and rice at people, which isn't that nutritious, to moving to nutritious food. USAID's Director Raj Shah says food without nutrition is immoral, or food aid. That's a big shift and a necessary one. Yes? There are 6 meals in this bag. They cook it in water for 20 minutes. If you can take some home with you. We have them usually for sales, just a kind of a donation fundraiser type of thing. Encourage you to feed your kids with it. What most people say is it needs a little salt, but it's very nutritious. 6 meals. Now, that's 6 meals for people who are starving, not 6 meals for Americans who are accustomed to eating a little bit more.
Have you guys run into any problems with distribution, like your containers being seized by, I don't know, you always see these news stories.
Absolutely.
How this warring faction sees, you know, aid and, I mean, I know food is used as an oppressive measure in many of these countries. How do you combat that?
We combat it through working with really established partners like Salvation Army. Salvation Army, I mean, you know, they're reputed. So we also work with Rotary International, and there's a couple of other groups that, but right now in our warehouse, for example, is a container of food we've been trying to ship into Liberia for the last 6 months. And we can't get the clearing, and so it's not leaving our warehouse until we get all the documentation that it needs. That we're incredibly cautious. We haven't lost any yet. Yes?
Is there a shelf life to this, or is it?
3-year shelf life, but once it hits the ground over there, it's used immediately.
I was wondering, you said if we have problems trying to get all the paperwork.
Yeah, yeah. And our warehouse is temperature controlled, so that helps accelerate that, you know, because most of these are going to tropical countries. So when it hits the ground, I'm sure that shelf life, what we worry about most is rodents. And not in our country, but in others. I mean, ours is rodent proof, or we have people that check all that, but when it hits the ground over there, rodents are the biggest issue. And something really exciting that we're doing is we're actually going to Haiti and setting up Numana as a business. So we're going to partner with the Salvation Army, we're going to hire local Haitians, and they're going to package the product that we'll buy in country. And so it's that development component, but they'll still feed school kids with it. And we're pretty excited about that. That's coming down the pike in the next couple of months. And we've got Colombia, South America, and other places that we're targeting is going that country and helping them do that. Yes?
This might not be a quick answer, but how does, do you have people in place that are part of Humana who are there who receive the food and pass it out? Or how does that specifically work out once the food is hit that location?
We just trust our partners, like the Salvation Army. You know, we know, we always go check, or make sure that the people that we're sending it to is going to, we either go before or we go after to make sure that those partners are solid. There's a new one in Kibera, the slum. There's a new group we're working with down there, and we were over there this summer and checked it all out. And then, of course, they send us photos, and we'll be sending a team over there to follow up on that. But, yeah, we just trust our partners. But there's, we've got to make sure they're really good partners before we.
All right.